It's another episode of Stick a Fork in It. And I love every single episode, right, Ev? But I so love when our friends return. So today we have, for me, mental health expert, guru goddess, Natasha Pierre back on the show in all of her gorgeousness inside and out. And we're so happy to have you back, Natasha.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always great to be with you all.
Natasha, before we get into our topic today, which I'm super excited and inspired about, I want you to explain your certifications because you really are a pro in your field that should be duly respected, everything that you've put in behind your education and what have you. So explain your qualifications as a coach and mental health expert.
There's a lot, and I might forget some. So I am a certified life coach, also a certified career coach. In the state of Florida, I am a supported employment coach, which basically means I work and can work with people who have complex disabilities to help them find and maintain employment. I am an emotional intelligence coach. I've got a couple certifications, diversity, equity, inclusion, post-pandemic leadership from USF. I'm a lifelong learner, so I've got a lot of certifications that I've taken relative to mental health. Of course, mental health first aid for youth and adults, trauma-informed care. So this is something that I do, and when I find another certification that I like, I take that too.
Well, absolutely. And sometimes those philosophies update, right? So you want to be kind of on
Absolutely.
the cusp of all of the new things. The USF digital program, I've taken a few of those courses as well. And what a gift those are.
They're wonderful. And my lived experience is one thing, and I also supplement that with the learning, with what are other experts in the field saying, what are other peers saying and sharing. So I'm always, I've got my Google alerts that come in and make sure I see everything relative to mental health.
That's amazing. And, we're moving into, we are starting, and it's really our topic for today is it's Women's History Month, right? Women's History Month. So preparing for this often, and I think the podcast is a gift for me because I do a little bit of research rather than just assumptions, if I can. And I encourage everyone who's listening to take a look, and I encourage both of you guys pre-recording this, is to Google search women in history, powerful women, and see what you can find. So each of us are going to present our few, and I think I'm going to kick us off and start that I was incredibly impressed by a number of folks that I never heard about. So all the way back to 1860, get ready for this. And this was part of our work at Feeding Tampa Bay. Anna Filosova in Russia was a philanthropist. She thought it was better to train the poor than to give them cash benefits. So what she did is provided support for the poor, training and connected them to work, but specifically for other women. 1860. So to me, we were powerhouses back in the day, right?
Absolutely.
1893, Kate Shepard presented a monster petition with over 32,000 women's signatures to be the first self-governing country to grant women's rights to vote in 1893. I think on the United States, we were a bit behind on that. Don't you all agree? I found that fascinating. I found that incredibly fascinating. And then just a key few highlights that I found that people might recognize or not. 1800 to 1867. Have you guys ever heard of Ada Lovelace?
No.
She was the first computer mind that inspired computers altogether. The way her thinking was, the way she processed, right? Then we have Rosa Parks, one of the most brave women that I think we all, if you're not familiar, you better. And then I had another one and I've got to find it. So maybe we'll talk and it'll come back to me. But she was an amazing Black designer that was right here in Tampa Bay that designed Jackie Kennedy's wedding dress. And she designed for all the elite politicians' wives and all the entertainers and elite, and was here right from Tampa Bay. And it'll come to me and I'll share it. But dang, I'm inspired. How about y'all? What did you guys find out?
100%. You know, in doing some research and looking at women in history, I realized that our curriculum needs to be updated because we should not be hearing of women being influencers, change makers, difference makers, beginning with the women's suffrage movement, beginning with the 1900s, when our work and our contribution to society has been since the beginning of time. And we're
Exactly.
not hearing about that. So when we see some of the influencers and change makers of today, they're not the first. They're the 2024 version, but what about the 1800 version and the 1700 versions? They existed too.
There were strong, magnificent women. Are there any that come top of mind to you, Natasha?
Top of mind, I think of who influenced me growing up. So I think of my childhood pastor, Adele Penn Brown. It was rare for a woman to be a pastor of a church when I was growing up. So I think of her. I think of Oprah. I watched her every day, every
Yes.
talent show. I was Oprah, as well as the person who did the commercials, one woman show. I did everything for, played all the roles for the talent show. Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, because journalism, that was something that I love. I consumed everything that they did. I watched them, you know. I love Dolly Parton just for her spirit. I just always thought that she was sweet and philanthropic. And those are the women that stood out to me as a child. I didn't really include entertainers much as a child. It was always
Yeah,
women in my field.
we're gonna get to that. We're definitely gonna get to that. Ev, really quick, who did you find as a woman of influence? Besides, I'm gonna tell you right now, your wonderful mother.
Yeah, she's definitely the top of the list. Yeah, and I think that the people that came to mind first when we were talking about it before was a couple of authors that I really like. One being Ursula K. Le Guin, wrote a book called The Dispossessed, but talks a lot about like different ways that society can be organized, like alternative to the way we do it now. You know, being more horizontal, more social, more fair. And also Bell Hooks, who was one of the kind of leading voices about intersectionality with, you know, feminism, race, class, that kind of thing, showing how all those things interact and affect one another, and you know, understanding how that creates the social fabric that we have today. So both of them were pretty big influences, like ideologically for me, I think.
And Shannon, I can't have my mom watch this without mentioning my mom. My great grandmother, grandmother, and mother were all entrepreneurs. So I'm a fourth generation female entrepreneur. They never had jobs. They've always worked for themselves and served and gave to the community. I knew my grandmother to be, you know, whenever she cooked for whom, whatever child was around. If you were
Right.
around, you ate. And so my entrepreneurial spirit is four generations deep now.
I love that. I love that. That's amazing. And just a minute ago, you mentioned entertainers. And we're going to deep dive into that really quickly because I happened to pull up in my Google search Forbes top 100 most powerful and influential women. On that list, the top four are in public service and policy, elected officials, maybe not so much. So they have a voice that they use to create change. There are scientists on that list. There are teachers on that list, philosophers. But I was really taken aback that number five, and I'm going to preface this with this human being is amazingly talented. She is incredibly generous. She gave to Feeding Tampa Bay on her tour and a number of food banks across the nation, providing many, many, many meals across the country. But as a top 100 influential woman, Taylor Swift was number five. Beyoncé was number six. So for me, and I'd love you guys' opinion, of course, you, Natasha, but Ev, you have two sisters. For me, growing up, that wasn't the entertainment industry, wasn't somewhat something that my goal to achieve. That wasn't someone that I looked up to. You talk about Barbara Walters. I studied her as a kid. She's iconic for me. in my age group. I'm 56 years old. When she stopped her public life, I was devastated. So those are the types of people that stood out for me and that my mother introduced me to, right?
Yeah.
Natasha, your input on that first.
You know, when you sent it to me, I was taken aback. Like, really? Five? You know, maybe further down? And I think now that I've had some time to think about it, I think technology and social media has had a huge role in that. Growing up, you know, I didn't have all of the social media platforms, Facebook and all of that. So my focus were on news. That's what I was interested in. And growing up for me, the path was high school, college, get your career. Fast forward, you know, coming up on, you know, my 30th anniversary, the paths are wider. They're more diverse. You know, women and girls do not have to follow the traditional path. And now that so many are making money with social media, entertainment is a valid pathway for many. So I see it and I get it. I think it's my own desire for us to, as a society, to value women who are change makers and difference makers in the way that I see and define difference and change making. But for this next generation, maybe they are inspired by someone who has taken the creative path. And that's not wrong. I think, you know, multiple things can be true at the same time.
Ev, what do you think?
Well, I was talking about it with you earlier, and I can't say that I understand entirely how Forbes chooses their list. But I think that when you think about like what celebrity or popularity means for our culture, a lot of it is like entertainment based. And so even becoming an influential person, like Natasha was saying, means something different now than it might have 30, 40, 50 years ago. And even if it feels shallow, you know, I think that the list is about people who have an influence in our culture, and that's probably true of Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Influence means different things.
So when we're
things.
Talking about the, I'm sorry, go ahead, Natasha.
I said influence means different things. If I can influence you to purchase a shirt, I'm an influencer. If I can influence you to come to my concert, I'm also an influencer. So there's different meanings, and I'd love to see them perhaps separate the list in the future based on categories. But, you know, there's space and room for us all.
Right. Very, very true. And, you know, we brought in young girls and how life has changed for them. You know, we're coming immediately. I'm coming from a list of my experience. And of course, again, I'm in social media and everything else as well. And you can influence me to purchase things all the time at 3 o'clock in the morning. But when we talk about our young women, future leaders, you know, Natasha, as a coach, given all these different ways and opportunities that our girls are influenced from a very young age, you know, because you have 3-year-olds on iPads or younger, I don't know. What are your suggestions? How do we use all of that information and raise really impactful, strong, confident women?
It's going to sound a little bit counterintuitive, but I really think it's stepping back from, you know, the influencers for a bit and returning parents and teachers and community leaders and mentors as the influencers. I've been thinking a lot about mentoring in this month. And it came from a journal entry that I was writing about, okay, who's the next you, Natasha? Not insofar as am I going to clone myself, but who is the next person that's going to be the mental health advocate that's going to take the radio, TV, you know, writing path? Are you pouring everything that you know into anyone? Or is everything that you know and everything that you can do going to remain with you? And that really bothered me. I felt that it is my duty to pass on what I know, to shorten the learning curve for another. And so I have one girl that I started working with that, you know, just modeling, taking her to different events that I'm attending, exposing her to the things that I know, letting her see and explore. And I think that's important. You know, social media is always going to be there. And I'm on the extreme side where I don't think anyone under age 16 should have a social media account that is not run by a parent. I just think there's too many doors and portals for them to be influenced. Now, growing up for me, even if there was social media, you know, I'm speaking from a different generation, the world has changed. I was involved in so many extracurricular activities that I probably wouldn't have time to be on social media and posting. From sports to TV, writing, I was exploring. I actually was living my adult life as a teenager, and it was great for me. I'd like to see a return to that. Internships, mentoring, pouring what we know into the next generation. Because I'll tell you this, I hear a lot of people complaining about Gen Z, Gen X. And I ask the same question. Well, were they hatched? You know, were they dropped from space? They were made by people who either did or did not mentor, did or did not model, and what they mentored and what they modeled. So what's missing often from the conversation is the role that previous generations play in preparing the current generation for success.
So you talk about mentors. Mentors could start at home.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Parents engaging, trying to understand, trying to support goals, all of those things, explaining some of those things that social media introduces us. But even if you don't have, because not everyone has the type of family that has that support system, right? To seek someone out of interest, right? What are you interested in? You know, that teacher, that specific class, you get amazing grades in history and you don't know why, you just love it and you're in elementary school. Let that history teacher be an influence to you. Find something that challenges you and makes you tick, right?
And this is where social media can be great, because you know, whereas when we were growing up, you had to go through someone's publicist. Right now, you can direct message any person on social media, any celebrity, any influencer, any CEO, et cetera, and you can have direct access to them. And I've found that when high school students do that, even middle school students, they get favorable outcomes. I've had many students reach out to me, can I interview you for my class project? Absolutely. And so the modeling and the mentoring begins at home, and then it goes out into the community. But it starts at home first.
It's very interesting, because those of us with social media should, that are, you know, have a following, have folks, need to really consider that. That you're representing, somebody's looking at you in a positive light and what that looks like. Like I've always told my kids, you represent your entire family when you go out the door. So let's remember that. It's the same thing, right? When social media, when you're talking and you're taking pictures, you're really representing to young men and women. We're talking about women this month, but men and women, you're representing opportunity and influence on them. So it's like, maybe that's from an adult perspective. We really need to keep that in mind.
Because the conversations that I've had with parents over the last couple years about their children being bullied, the children that have been bullying, the bullies, they learned that from somewhere. That was modeled at home. That was modeled in their community. And so it starts with, what are we modeling for our children to see? And how is that behavior now going into school? I'm very intentional with my social media, because I know, not just from a mental health standpoint, but I know that I have teenagers that follow my pages, teenagers that reach out to me. So there are certain pictures that will never make it to social media. There's certain ways that I would never present myself on social media, because I want, one, mental health is too important to me. Two, being a professional. Three, I believe that some things are private and sacred, and it's not a right or wrong thing. But for me, I'm very intentional about my image, my brand, and the people that are looking at me.
So moving forward, do you have, for maybe family members, doesn't have to be a parent, it can be a sister, it could be a friend. How do we help inspire you know, confidence, authenticity, how important authenticity is. That's a big thing for me, right, Ev? Authenticity. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. It's important to me. Push back fear, dignity, respect. Having folks understand, I'm giving you a laundry list. Having folks understand that trauma, that what you do to someone or say, you know, in our world, it's right now a big thing is helping folks understand food trauma. Things like you're too skinny and you need a cheeseburger. Should you really be eating that if the perception is that you're larger than your size? I think we have an interesting space in our world right now where we can create that change. How do we, I just mentioned one thing in our world at Feeding Tampa Bay. How do we start making that change for folks?
There's an educational component to this. It's learning new language. It's stepping away from devices and actually having conversations. The food trauma resonated with me because I went to college at 96 pounds. And so my dad is 6'2", 6'3", 175 pounds. This is just my body. I couldn't help it. Even if I tried eating more, I mean, I wasn't gaining any weight. And the comments that I heard over and over and over, they didn't help me then. Fortunately, I had great women in my life where I was able to ignore and just be me. But we need to have the conversations. We need to let, you know, young girls know that it's okay to be you. It's okay to explore who you are, what your interests are, and it can be different from everyone else in your peer group, and that's okay. It's okay to be you. I think there's so much sameness as we fight to be individual, as we talk so much about authenticity. There's so much sameness when we look at the things that women do to their bodies and, you know, whatever you want to do to your body is your choice, but ensure that you're doing it because you want it and not because you think it's going to make other people like you or you think it's going to position you for greater success in the eyes of others. You want to make sure that it is something that is consistent with your values, with how you see yourself and with, you know, what's authentic for you. And I think that a lot of women, myself included, we face the pressure every day to conform to certain beauty standards. And for young girls that 10 to 13 who are finding themselves, it's important that there are women in their lives that show them that there's another path if you choose to accept it. It's like those books, again, dating myself here, where you can choose the alternate ending. There's an alternate ending if you choose. You don't have to go the path that you see your friends going down and towards. But that only comes with communication. It comes with relationship, and there can be no relationship where there isn't any respect, mutual respect.
Do you have any examples through the mentoring that you do that you can share with us and some impact stories? Like, how have you helped, you know, women to date? Just a few examples.
Years. Wow. This started back when I lived in New York. I was a professional model in New York and I had a mentoring group or mentoring program called The Model Within. And my tagline was, I can teach you to model and that'll last a season, or I could develop the model within and it will last a lifetime. So modeling was the hook because that's what everyone wanted. That's what all of the young girls wanted. Mm-hmm. I'd work with Barbizon and John Casablanca and all of those schools. And so I developed my program. I teach them how to model, but what else did we do? We also spoke about etiquette. We also spoke about, you know, hygiene, about communication. I would teach them how to, you know, speak to a camera like I did when I was 9 years old. So I infused a lot of the soft skills as well as the personal development skills that were necessary. The years that I worked as a model, I modeled for as long as I did because I not only understood the industry, I understood what the industry needed and wanted from me. And so I was the one who came, you know, with my own makeup. So just in case the makeup artist didn't get to me, I was ready to do my own. I came with my hair ready that, you know, and just in case they couldn't do it, I'll figure out how to do the style. I had a sewing kit and Band-Aids and tape and I had everything. And my reputation became Natasha's always prepared. Mm-hmm. So when I work with girls in New York and Maryland, every state that I live in, even now, it is have your reputation be that you're prepared. have your reputation be that, you know, we can always count on her in a pinch, because that's what I've been since I was 14 when I started working in TV. I was always ready. I was always prepared. I always reviewed the material in advance. Some of it, you know, might have been my overachieving, but also I knew that it made me stand out from everyone else. I brought something else. And so if there was 10 models there, well, let's go with Natasha because we know we'll have to do less with her. That's, you know, I don't have intentionally back then, I didn't get any tattoos because I thought they're going to have to hire someone to airbrush that out. So I'm not going to do it. And that's what I pass on to girls now. Stand out in your own way. Have your authenticity be the reason why you're remembered.
Bravery comes with that. When I hear you say that, it's teaching young women to be brave.
Yes.
Right? I think of that. And I'm going back, like when you're saying you're 14, 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I was not that brave to really be my authentic self. It took me a number of years. So there's not a timeline on it. Right? It's just a goal to achieve that space where you feel comfortable with yourself. I think it's really, quite frankly, magical that we're in a time, you know, maybe Taylor Swift is number five.
Mm-hmm.
But we also are communicating with young girls that just be authentically you, hone in on your talents. Those happen to be hers. What are yours?
What are yours?
What are yours? You may be terrific physically, an athlete, wonderful. You may have incredible grades. That GPA is stellar and off the charts. There are so many amazing, beautiful things that we can celebrate about everybody.
Absolutely.
And I think we see that now. I think if we go back in time a little bit, maybe even to the 1800s, like we were talking about, right? I don't know if it was quite as popular, the conversation we're having today on how much we really want to lift our young ladies towards their personal power. Right?
Not as popular. You know, it was harder to be brave back then.
Right.
Today, today it's easier to be brave. Merriam-Webster's word of the year for 2023 was authenticity. And so I've got my I am brave there. I've got a bracelet that says I am brave. And it reminds me to remain in that place, being true, being authentic, being Natasha. You know, I tell people all the time, Natasha is the only thing on the menu. So if you're looking for Shannon, I have to send you to Shannon. But Natasha is all I got for you. And that just reminds me to be me, to remain in my space that I do not sing like Beyonce. You're going to have to go to Beyonce for that. And even where I am, the way that I am a mental health educator, this is my way. Someone else may have a different way, and that's fine because there's space for all of us. I think what's important, and you know, I was driving today and thinking about stick a fork in it. What I would like us to stick a fork in, not just in terms of eating, but in terms of let's make sure that this is done, is the gatekeeping that women sometimes do in the workplace, the hoarding of ideas and people. I think it is the antithesis of our character. We're nurturers, we're sharers, we're givers. And when we remain in silos and want to hoard and keep everything for ourselves, it does a disservice not only to us because we miss out on collaborations, but also we're modeling bad behavior for the next generation. You know, we're not allowing the next generation to see what it looks like to have healthy female relationships in the workplace, in community. It's, you know, you don't have to only be in a sorority to have really good girlfriends. I have some people here in Tampa Bay and around the nation that I love. I can call them with everything from, you know, hair products and makeup to, okay, I need to work on this grant and everything in between. And it is me recognizing that their strengths in no way diminish mine. That has allowed these relationships to and friendships to continue.
It sounds to me that's when fear takes over, right? You're afraid. You're afraid that mm-hmm. someone's gonna move your cheese or, you know, expand on your idea, or it's like a personal hoarding that I do think professionally, now we're going back again, I'm showing my age, that was almost encouraged.
It was.
by workforce, by management teams. You know, you had to stand on your own and do well, and that's how you were getting that review. And goes into this still being a magnificent and magical time, because collaborations, even at Feeding Tampa Bay, we're moving into the only way we can create great change for ourselves and others is collaboration.
Absolutely. There's a scarcity mindset that I see a lot, where, okay, there can only be one mental health educator. No, there's 8 billion people on the planet. We need all of the educators. We need all of the mental health providers. And I think that comes from the day where, again, scarcity, where, okay, maybe only one person is going to get this promotion, and it's got to be me. So I've got to be cutthroat to every other woman.
Yep.
I've got to win the man's approval, because that's history. I've got to make him like me, and then that'll make sure I knock out all of the competition. There's a book that I read last year in December that I just finished listening to, and I will listen to it several times this year. It's called Playing Big by Tara Moore. And in the final chapter of the book, she talks about us being this generation, this time, being the transition team. Years ago, 1700, 1800, women were still fighting to be seen, to be recognized. Mm-hmm. It was harder to be brave. In the future, 20, 30 years from now, it's going to be the norm. Right now, we are the transition team, and it's up to us to ensure that the future comes a lot sooner for women than later. And it means that sometimes, you know, I love creating opportunities for women. You know, guys are great, but when it comes to women and girls, I want to create the opportunities, because if I can shorten your learning curve, if I can tell someone how to make a reel, a video, how I create copy, how I do public speaking, how to write a pitch, how did I get to the point where people recognize me as a mental health educator? If I can shorten the time for someone, why would I not do that? For me, it's like it's part of my give back to the world, that I've been blessed with so many opportunities, talents, skills, and abilities. How dare me think that they're only to benefit myself? I just don't think like that.
I think that leans into understanding and empathy of how important those two, and this is across the board. This is human beings alike. Right? We're not in the same place. Taking the time to take a breath and understand someone and really care about what their opinion is, or have a really in-depth conversation over it. It's okay to not be on the same page, but you have to give respect if you're not, right?
Yes.
Those are the empathy and understanding to me are so important. Mm-hmm. It's things that I think it's something personally you can work on every day. Especially if you come from a later age where you were conditioned one certain way, it really is not easy to, when you talk culturally, as time has shifted, when you have to grow, you shift with it.
You do.
But it's really not easy to do that for folks.
It's not. And it sounds like you read my journal entry today. I don't know how you did it, but I wrote about me wanting to work on increasing my empathy when I encounter women who I recognize are dealing with low self-esteem, but how they express it is antagonistic to me. Mean girls aren't born, they're made. There was a trauma, there was an experience that created that mean girl behavior. And I journaled about wanting to develop my empathy for mean girls. And I hated that I wrote that, because I want to say, no, mean girls, scratch them off the list. They're excommunicated. But that's just not me. And I'm like, why do I have to be this person? That's what I wrote. It's like, you know, having empathy for mean girls, yeah, they deserve love too. They're dealing with mental health challenges too. When people come at me in an antagonistic manner, there's a reason why they're doing it. How do I create space for compassion and grace to enter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's always a reason, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason. You can bring up Mean Girls. Mm. As a young girl, human nature, I did something mean as a young girl in school. It was mean what I did. And if I remember correctly, it was kind of almost like a social power play, if you will. But I had a grandmother who told me and opened my eyes to how ugly that was, what I did, right? So not everyone has someone who intercedes for you and says, what you did was wrong. Why would you hurt someone for that? Why do you, and it asked the, first she asked the questions. Then she explained to me why it was the wrong thing to do. And I'm talking going very young. And she would remind me all the time, all the way into adulthood, remember who you are. Her famous saying was, pretty is pretty does. Right? So for me, and I don't know for you guys, when you run across somebody who, a mean girl, a mean person, most often I go back into that questioning, why are they being so mean? I'm not being weak about it. It's just in my mind. I'm like, huh, what caused them to be that way? And I think it's really important for us to think like that. You know, why?
It took some time for me to get to that place. And I think it is just the generation that I was born in, because women were reared to be competitive and to get that top spot, that there could only be one. I did not receive for a very long time. I had tough relationships with women. And that was because I was the youngest, or I was the one that was chosen out of however many. And I was on the rough side, especially when you look a certain way, or you have a background in modeling.
Mm-hmm.
There's a privilege that comes with pretty, but there's also an ugly side that comes with pretty, and that's where the mean girls live. So today, I pause. I'm like, I wonder why did I pause? Did I do something? Maybe is my face showing that, you know, don't talk to me? I consider that maybe I could have been at fault for the interaction. I extend grace where I can. And then other times I just leave it alone. If it's to be, it will be. I don't force connections and force relationships, but I am aware of not being a mean girl. I never want to be the reason someone has trauma.
Right.
I never want to be I remember that Natasha Pierre. I never want that said about me. And so that governs my behavior.
Well, and I think for us that's listening, you know, all the listeners, I think our conversation has taken Women's History Month to the next level, because a lot of the things that we've talked about, we can take into our own lives. And, you know, I know for me, it's going to be a reminder. And Ev, we're talking about women, but really quick before we dismount, what are your thoughts from a man's point of view? I really think a lot of the things we're talking about are universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think tying back to like what I was saying about bell hooks, like the reality is that, like, we live in a very patriarchal society. You know, a lot of what is normal is, you know, is a male perspective. And so, unfortunately, I think a lot of times women do find themselves held to those standards and kind of competing to accomplish those, I guess, male goals, you know, like things that we, ways that a male would want to structure society. And I think, like Natasha was saying about, you know, Oprah being an impactful woman in history, she was the one that said, hurt people, hurt people. And I think that if you take that mindset into your interactions with people and you see their anger as their pain, actually, like, you can kind of be more empathetic with them. And I think that goes a long way to solving some of the issues of, like, competition and anger and gatekeeping and stuff like that. It's like viewing other people as having the same struggles, or having struggles that you can't see. So their behavior is not them hating you, it's just them struggling.
And that leans into courageous conversations. being okay with having the tough conversation of, I think we got off on the wrong foot, or I heard you say this, but maybe I misunderstood. Do you mind clarifying what you meant like that? Because I really want us to have a good working relationship. And I'll tell you, that's language that I've developed in the last 4 years, because I have always been, I am Natasha, this is the way, I know it's right, I don't speak about anything unless I know this is the path, let's go. Again, very patriarchal, maybe a little bit of middle child and Aries sprinkled in there, but I'm softening and coming around and like, what's the goal? Is it the me or is it the we? When the goal is the we, then we soften our communication. We care to lean into compassion and grace and empathy. If the goal is me, I'm just the bull in the china shop and I'm getting to my destination regardless of who I run over. And that is the antithesis of collaboration and of community. So I'm walking my talk in that area and leaning into the empathy and the grace and having the conversations.
And being thoughtful, you know, hurt people, hurt people. Wow. That says a lot right there. So Natasha, thank you for joining us once again. Ev, I think it would be wonderful if we put in our notes, the books that you guys mentioned that I think are so helpful. You know, women are a powerful force and have been since the beginning of time. But for me, I think we're becoming even more humanity. Mm-hmm. is moving in a different direction and becoming more understanding. So happy Women's History Month.
Happy Women's History Month. Thank you for having me.
Not going to lie, we're badasses.
Yes. Yes, we are. I mean, you know, hey.
That's a feeding Tampa. That's a feeding Tampa Bay term right there. So on that note, thank you again, my friend. And we're going to see you in the fall where we're going to talk about a whole nother topic that you and I on the side chat about ourselves.
Absolutely.
You can learn more about Feeding Tampa Bay and how to join the movement at feedingtampabay.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and TikTok at Feeding Tampa Bay.